Doula Dispensary, the podcast prescribing a weekly dose of all things doula. The dilemmas discussed are made-up scenarios, and any resemblance to actual persons or events are purely coincidental. Please welcome your hosts, Siobhan and myself, Kiki.
Episode 17.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome, Siobhan.
Welcome, Kiki. Welcome all.
And we're not really here today.
So, yes, this is pre-recorded because
I'm away.
You're in Florence.
I'm away this week. So if you are in Florence, look me up. We can meet up somewhere for a drink.
Very nice.
Yeah. I am there with my husband. That was not Florence.
And I'm busy working and buying presents. So, yeah, so this is pre-recorded.
Yeah, and I had the opportunity, was very lucky to have a chat with Penny Simkin about her work, of course, and some of our thoughts around childbirth, and that is what we are gonna be sharing with you today.
The lovely Penny.
Penny Simkin. So we hope you enjoy listening to her wise words.
Yes, and it just leaves us to say we wish you all a very Merry Christmas. And we will be back in the new year,
yeah,
with a special couple of guests. Actually, we've got some guests lined up for the new year,
so we hope you can join us. We hope you're staying with us.
And we also would just like to say to all those doulas that are on call over Christmas,
yes,
we're thinking of you,
yeah,
and we will raise a glass.
We
to
will
you.
That's mean.
Well, if they can't drink it, I might as well.
Yes, so right, just as per normal.
So hopefully no babies will come on Christmas Day to take you away from your own families, but if they do,
I don't know, there's not much I can say,
no,
really. It's a bit crap,
it is what it is.
It is what it is. So let's listen to Penny and what she's got to say about things, about childbirth,
yeah,
about lots of different things.
Enjoy the show.
Yeah. Ba-da-ba-da-bow. So, hi, Penny Simkin. I'm so excited to be talking to you again and to have you here with us.
Well, thank you, Kiki, and it's nice to be with you and to talk to your doulas.
Yeah, so I spoke to you or emailed you about coming and talking to us, and you said you wanted to talk about the significance of birth. So I thought that was a brilliant topic. So are you happy to go ahead and just talk a bit about that?
Yeah, well, I'll see what I can do on that. Mm-hmm. I'll start off by saying how I learned how important this was. And actually, I published this paper in two parts back in the early 90s, I think 1991 and 1992. So it's ancient history, mm-hmm, except that it's been confirmed by other studies. So I'm very happy about that. But I was thinking about leaving the field of childbirth education back after I'd been teaching for about 20 years. I'm now in year 49. So I didn't quit, but I was thinking about it. And I decided that before I quit, I would find out if some of my students even remembered the birth that I had been preparing them for, because I'd been teaching for 20 years. And I thought, well, I'll just see if I can reach some of those people that I had in my original classes and have a talk with them. And and the interesting thing is that I had always asked people to write their birth stories and answer a questionnaire after their babies were born, and I'd never thrown those away. In fact, I still haven't, although we're just starting to throw some of that away. So I had the story as they wrote it right after their babies were born. And then now 20 years later, 15 to 20 years later, I wanted to contact them again. I was able to locate 20 women and that lived in the area. And I contacted them and asked them to participate. And they all said yes, which was quite striking right there. But then I sent them a questionnaire very much like the first one, just to see how they compared, and got those back. And then I had them come in for a lengthy interview, which I taped and transcribed. So I was very interested in finding what they remembered and how they felt about the birth years later. Mm-hmm. And they, I had complete data on 20 people. And I found many things. I found number one, they do remember. Mm-hmm. When I compared the first story that they wrote right after the birth and the later one, mm-hmm. they were so similar. It was uncanny. The story was longer. The first one, it's come down a little bit, but it was so consistent. The memories were so consistent. That struck me. I also asked them to rate their satisfaction as they look back on the experience on a scale of 1 to 7. 7 being the, let's see, 7 was the highest possible mm-hmm. Rating. And so after comparing them and being very struck by the fact they remembered, then I asked them to come in individually for this interview. And we went over, we compared the two stories, and I asked other questions. And I won't go into all the details on that, but I'd invite people to read about it if they want. But what I found was, number one, they did remember clearly. Number two, most of them rated their satisfaction as fairly high. Only a few of the women, what I did was I took the highest, mm-hmm. the people that rated it highest, and then I put everybody else in another group, everything from, I guess it was highest was 1, and mm-hmm. 2 to 7 was lower. I found that the way people remembered was so different if they had the highest satisfaction than the lowest. Duh, that's not a surprise. But the things that I did discover were that the people who remembered it being very satisfying weren't the people that had the easiest births. We had the whole range, the whole gamut mm-hmm. of natural births, medicated births. They all had wanted unmedicated births. Mm-hmm. This was back in the late 80s and in the late 60s and 70s that they were giving birth. And they, but they all had wanted a natural birth. Those were the only people that took classes back in those days. And it didn't seem to matter whether they had exactly the kind of birth they had anticipated mm-hmm. or prepared for. What I found was the most important correlation was with how they remembered being cared for and by their doctors and nurses. We had no midwives practicing in the U.S. at that time or in the Seattle area where I'm from, and we certainly had no doulas. We had some had their partners there. Mm-hmm. That was still a rare occurrence, and they had to leave if anyone else came in the room or if they, for the birth, you know, they could only be in there sporadically. But it's how they remembered being cared for. Mm. And they had, they could tell me stories from, you know, 20 years later. And I'll give you an example. One woman went to the same doctor for 4 births, which, you know, today they never, there's no continuity whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But at her first, this was for her first birth. And when he read her history, she had a kidney stone. And when he read it, oh, he said, oh, birth, nothing like a kidney stone. You have nothing to worry about if you got through a kidney stone. And so she said, well, he'd never given birth. And afterwards, so she made a joke with him. And that joke carried through all 4 pregnancies. You know, she reminded him, you thought a kidney stone was nothing, birth was nothing compared to a kidney stone. So they shared humor, yeah. And that's the point. There were quite a few where they could joke with each other, mm-hmm. a very unusual relationship today. Another woman remembered her nurse. She'd had a long back pain, Oxford posterior labor, and the nurse was with her throughout, and then it was time for the nurse to leave, and she decided to stay on because the woman was about to start pushing. Mm-hmm. The woman was very touched by that she wanted to stay and help her get through it. And then afterwards, the woman remembered the nurse stayed and gave her a back rub. Oh. And she said it with tears in her eyes, I'd never had a back rub before. And she remembers lying on her belly for the first time in months mm-hmm. and looking out the window, and the Goodyear blimp was flying in the sky alongside. And that was, we have Seafair in Seattle, big festival with races and things. She remembered that and this lovely back rub. And it was like a photographic memory, you know, just just etched in her memory yeah. with all this emotion. Other women said things like, after that, I knew I could do anything. Another woman said, it was the best day of my life, which seems kind of sad, but that's the way it was. But the triumph, the sense of accomplishment, mm-hmm. the enhanced self-esteem, these were all themes that I found were elevated, and that was what was associated with satisfaction. It was an easy birth, all that. So what I learned from all that, and there were some very sad things too, some of the unsatisfied women. There was one, well, there were three women that I could tell had the same nurse because of the way they described her. But this nurse was so, well, I'd say cruel. Okay. She said, stop that breathing right now. I won't have it. That's a quote. She would kick the fathers out every chance she got. And I keep thinking, golly, this woman is remembered 20 years later. Yeah. They remember her with that. And I thought, is that good karma? How would you like to be remembered with people who hated you or thought you were terrible? Yeah. And so when I talk to nurses and midwives, I say, you're going to be remembered. Mm-hmm. You're a part of this experience. You're going to be remembered forever. Mm-hmm. How would you like to be remembered? I think it doesn't hurt to keep that in mind. And doulas, same thing now. Yeah. We're part of it. But those were associated with lower satisfaction. And so from that, I thought, well, golly, we can't control how long labor is going to be. We can't control, I mean, to an extent we can, but the position of the baby and whether it's going to be backache or mm-hmm. it's going to start when she's exhausted. But we can always control how we take care of a person. Mm. We can always be kind. Yeah. And this is where I thought, that's when I started thinking about training doulas. Because at that time, the late 60s, early 70s was when I was teaching these people, but it was in the late 80s that I was interviewing them. Mm-hmm. And we had nursing shortages, and we had partners, but partners were there. It was quite well established by the time I did this study. Mm-hmm. They're frightened as the woman is.
Yes.
And they can't always be the calm, strong person.
No.
So anyway, we had studies by John Kennel and Marshall Klaus, bless their hearts, our founders of DONA, and they had done the studies in Guatemala. And I had read about those, and I was quite interested. They found that when there was a person with a woman in labor, that she had shorter labors and things. I thought, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But it didn't register as something that would apply in our industrialized North America. But when I realized that people never forget, I thought that right there is important. You know, maybe we should take Klaus and Kennel's model and see if we can do that here.
Yeah.
And I started, training doulas at that time. But before I get to that part, I want to tell you some of the other things that I remember. I found that over time, when I compared the two stories, mm-hmm. the women who felt highly satisfied tended to feel highly satisfied all that time.
Okay.
Their satisfaction matched. The people that had lower satisfaction were more unsatisfied over time. They were more angry. They were more, it didn't get better with time, I found.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been borne out, I've discovered, by other studies.
Okay.
That when people have a negative birth experience, it doesn't wear off and they start thinking, feeling good about it, unless there could be some intervention.
Okay.
Where, maybe we could have a talk with her, help her to see a more positive side, etc. But that's not this topic. But that was very, so I began to realize we're creating a memory that is permanent.
Mm.
It'll be with her for the rest of her life. So this is terribly important.
Yeah.
And that's why it took me a long time before I could find someone who would sponsor. It took 2 years of trying to get different organizations. I won't name them because I'm still a little miffed with them for not letting me do this. But finally, the midwifery school in our city, Seattle Midwifery School, asked me if I would do it for them. So so we started training doulas in 1988.
Okay.
And here in Seattle. Now, I'm not saying I invented this by any means because there were other labor support people doing this kind of work, but it was loose and unorganized and that sort of thing. But since then, in 2009, there was a Scandinavian study that looked at Iceland, Sweden, and another country.
Norway, Finland,
Norway,
Denmark,
Norway.
Norway. Okay.
Yeah. And they found, it was part of a large study on healthcare as older people remembered it. Mm-hmm. And there was a subset of people that kept talking about their births. And the researchers hadn't really wanted to hear that part. But then they began to realize, they don't forget this. Yeah. So they published a sub-study from there. And there have been others that have shown that people don't forget. And mine, I think, is besides the one from Scandinavia, is the longest term one. So that's kind of how I got started thinking long term. And one of my mottos, and for your doulas, I would want them to be thinking this all the time, is when they're with someone in labor, to have in the back of my back of their minds, how will she remember this? How will she remember this? So if someone speaks to her unkindly, or gets, you know, tells her, you've got to be quiet. You're disturbing all the women in the other rooms. You know, that kind of thing. The doula has to be thinking, this is going to hurt her, and she's going to remember it forever. So we do what we can to mitigate that at the time. And it takes, it's an art. Because we can't just speak to the midwife and say, you know, stop that. You can't talk to her that way. But we try to mitigate it in other ways with, you know, you're doing so well. And let's just make sure we've got a rhythm to those sounds. And and we could maybe shut the door if she's if she's being very vocal. But that has been my guide all the way through my work. I've, you know, I've been doing it. I did retire about a year ago from actively doula-ing. But 48 years of doula work.
That's amazing.
And that was the thing that I think is the main thing. She's going to remember it. And then we have something to say about how she's going to remember it.
Yeah, that's very true, because often new doulas are very concerned with what they're going to do, how they're going to fix problem. And I often try and say the same thing, you know, just think about what your role is. Your role is to be there with them and make the best out of any situation rather than fixing everything. So, so for example, in that situation, if someone said, often in England, you will hear midwives say, you know, if you keep making that sound, you're going to get a really sore throat, you know, and women actually, it's not that harsh, but women will still take that as criticism. And I will say something like to the woman, well, or and the midwife, I'll say, well, you'll have a sore throat and the baby. And we have a little laugh.
That's a good one.
So maybe that is helpful. And like you said, remind, say some good things. But it's difficult, isn't it, when we see women being treated a bit unkindly in labor.
And we, I feel that sometimes we as doulas are aware that this isn't very kind treatment, and we assume the woman feels the same way. And one of the things that another lesson I would give, you know, which you already know, and probably your doulas do too, but we can't assume that the woman feels exactly the same about her birth as we do. And sometimes, you know, we might think that was horrible, or they never should have done that, or whatever. And the woman doesn't see that. And so we go to visit for a postpartum visit and expect her to say, that person was so cruel to me, or, you know, they're quite traumatized, and they don't. And some doulas have made the mistake of saying how they never should have done that to you, you know, or thinking they're being protective and kind and understanding. We have to take the lead from her, because her perception, she may not even have noticed that someone got an episiotomy, or, you know, she may not feel that was part of a negative experience at all. And so we have to sound her out, find out. You know, one of the things that I've always said to people when I would go to visit, I say, I was there, I saw every moment of it, but I want to know what this was for you. And would you like to just, let's just talk it through. And I'd find, oh my gosh, I'm glad I didn't tell her what I thought, because I would have been wrong. So her perception, and, you know, I have this theory that only the woman experiences birth from the inside. She's going through it. She's feeling it. She's, you know, living it. The rest of us, including the camera, the video camera and the still camera, those are, they represent what it was from the outside, and so do we. It's what we saw, what other people saw. And my theory is that when the inner reality for the woman and the outer reality are very different from each other, the woman has a lot of processing to do, because you know, she may say, I was so noisy, I'm ashamed of myself, I was so noisy. And from the outer reality, the camera, even, you know, she wasn't making much noise, but from the inside she felt that way. And so she's been judging herself. But we can't just say, oh, no, you weren't noisy. We can't do it that way. But we have to have her, explore that. And then at some point we might say, you know what? I'm surprised to hear you say that, because from my point of view, you were really quite calm, and you moaned, and there was a nice rhythm to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised that you feel that way. So I've had women say, really? Yeah. Really? Can I feel that way? Yes, you can, dear. Yeah. but we have to be kind of careful about, we don't just try to correct her, mm-hmm. but we hear her out, and then we just compare our perception with hers, and sometimes it can be very positive. Mm-hmm. And then other times people will see. Do people video their births very often in the UK?
No, not very often, don't think. If they're having home births sometimes, but it doesn't happen all the time in hospitals. Home births, yeah.
Yeah, well, it used to be, back when I was doing a lot of videotaping, everyone wanted their births videotaped, and I would make it part of my service. I'd bring someone who would videotape the birth,
oh, wow.
And now nobody ever wants that. And, of course, they have their little iPhone, they can take their own little 30-second video, and I think that's enough. But in the day when they were videotaping, they said, my gosh, I thought I was so much more noisy than I was, or I didn't look half as bad as I thought I was.
Think that kind of thing. The birth, that it's over now. They try to put it away and forget about it. And I just wish there was a way we could show women how important it is to actually, like you say, have a debrief or a birth completion session or something to make it healing experience. So do you find that is something, do you think it's better or worse now? So you've been in this business for so long. Do you think women are doing the same thing? Are they more aware, or is it, in terms of their birth memories?
I think that there is an awareness growing. Okay. The whole term birth trauma is all over the place now. And, I have to say, the UK, all your publications for the public, every movie star, every celebrity in the UK has a traumatic birth. Oh. They call it traumatic. And pardon me, I'm feeling a little, I think, the word traumatic may be overused in the UK.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the way we define it in the scientific literature.
Yeah.
And it has to be, life-threatening, or you think your life was threatened,
mm-hmm.
or someone else's life, like your baby's. And then that you felt lonely and unprotected. And I think that the word traumatic sometimes means really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
But where am I going with that? I think that an awareness that birth can be traumatic,
mm-hmm.
is and publicly traumatic,
mm-hmm.
can be. I think that's probably more accepted now. But then, what to do about it is the place where we're really in trouble. And you have in the UK, you have Susan Ayres.
Yeah.
Do you know her?
Yeah. Yeah, I think
she's done. Yes. She should come talk to your doulas.
Okay.
She and others, but she is fantastic. I met her, and I was so glad to meet her when I was in London the last time.
I came with you. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, you were there.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. Of course. Yes, I love her, and I love you. But she kind of coined the term. I'm giving her credit for it. She may say other people deserve it too, but PTSD AC, after childbirth, because the definition of post-traumatic stress disorder has been changed recently with the Diagnosis and Statistics Manual, and they left out some of the things about feelings that are so important after birth. And so Susan Ayres and others have wanted to give a special definition for post-traumatic stress disorder after childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
And they're right on that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And as that awareness grows, I think in the mental health field, mm-hmm. People are becoming more and more aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we in childbirth education should be pointing that out. And in the doula world, doulas now know that they're often witnessing a traumatic birth. So I think it's coming, but we have a long way to go.
Yeah, because in one sense, all the talk about trauma and traumatic births And with some of the TV programs we have here in the UK, I don't know, do you have one born every minute in the States or something?
We have our own version, yeah. I think, probably an American version. Yeah. I don't watch those things.
No, neither do I. I just get angry when I watch it because it's – but what it seems to do is making more and more women scared of giving birth. You know, the trypophobia is on the rise massively in the UK. And I don't know, what as doulas – how can we, you know, there's so, I just spoke to a woman now actually who's she's going to have a baby in 3 weeks. And she said, I've just denied it. I try not to think about it. I just don't know how this baby is going to come out every time. Oh. And I don't know what's going on with her. Well, I can guess from, you know, doing some of the workshops when she says it just all that area just feels numb. And I don't know how I'm going to have a baby come out of there. And I don't want to have a cesarean, but I have to have a baby. And
this is her first baby.
Her first baby.
First baby, yeah. Oh, boy, 3 weeks from now. Ugh. Exactly. That's a very tough one.
Yeah, so I think lots of doulas have this. We have more and more women coming to us with real fear. I mean, everyone's a bit concerned, but there's this real phobia, you know, real fear. And I guess it's difficult. What would you say? I mean, you work a lot with trauma supporters, and
yes,
I know one of the questions actually that was asked to ask you was what piece of advice do you think you would give to us doulas and to all the new doulas to think about every time we or often work with vulnerable women and women that are trypophobic?
Well, you know, when it's 3 weeks from now, it's very, very hard to figure out. And all I would want to do is just try to help her put a voice to this, you know, to put some words to it. And do you have birth plans? Do people use birth plans?
Yes, we do. Preferences. So, yes, exactly.
Yeah. And in the birth plan to say, I have a huge fear of childbirth. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how the baby's going to come out.
Yeah.
And I think if they can disclose that to the care providing staff, I think most staff are going to be sensitive to that. There'll be some that just say she's foolish or she's looking for attention. But most, I think, would want to be as gentle as possible and to acknowledge that. And we'll try to make this as good for you as possible. There's not a whole lot of work that can be done. Sometimes when I've had people that can't put a voice, put into words what's going on, I'll sometimes take the most innocuous film I have of birth and ask them to watch it with me with the remote in her hand.
Okay.
And if there's anything that you see that is troubling you, click and we'll talk about it. So we can, you know, it's kind of a shortcut to trying to do a few things like, well, if they're going to do a vaginal exam, and that's a very common fear for many people, well, maybe we can have us count to 100 together. We'll, you know, I'll be right with you. We'll look at each other and we'll count to 100. Or I'll count to 100 and you just nod your head with the counting. Or, you know, some very simple strategy that might make her feel a little bit more in control. It's and you know the trigger work that I do, but that takes special training and that is
exactly.
lengthy.
Yes.
But if she can voice her concern and have the respect of the staff, that can make a big difference. And whatever she wants, if she wants an epidural when she first enters, you know, I'd want to do everything I could to try to accommodate that fear.
Yeah, no, that's really good things. This is what I spoke to her about, but she, you know, she's scared of having a cesarean. She's scared of, it's just really confusing for her. But I did have a long talk to her and I will talk to her again. So, but that's really good suggestions for new doulas. I really like the thing with the film because she's in control of the remote as well. So she can.
Yeah, right. She can stop it if she wants to.
Switch it off if she wants to, if it's all too much. So that's really brilliant.
And I would take something that's very, very normal and straightforward because if you started off with some where there's a lot of sound, it might be terrifying. Yeah.
So some very boring birth video. So, well, do you have anything else? Do you have another piece of advice?
I have this the caregiver's motto that.
Yes.
So when we're working with vulnerable people, sometimes. They don't trust us. Mm-hmm. In fact, they've learned, you know, usually they've learned that you can't trust people, mm-hmm. especially people in authority. Mm-hmm. And a doula, although doulas are pretty lowly in terms of the hierarchy in the hospital,
yeah.
we are often perceived by the client as someone who knows a lot and might want to control me or mm-hmm. tell me what to do. And so it may be difficult for them to automatically trust the doula. And sometimes the doula can get very frustrated by mm-hmm. that. You know, what have I done to deserve this? I've been as nice as I could be. Why won't she trust me? You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What we've just seen is that the doula has made it about her
yeah.
instead of about the woman. And so I have my caregiver's model. I'm going to try to hold it up for you.
Okay. I'll see if you can get
it. I think this can, let's see now, where do I put it?
So, yeah, that's perfect. There.
Can you read it? Read
yeah,
it to
just
me.
Just slightly to your right. And it says, caregiver's motto, this person has very good reason for feeling this way, saying these things, behaving this way, believing these things.
Okay. And then, so we give her credit. She has good reason. We don't know the reason, but it isn't for no reason at all. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, it says,
the caregiver's motto, I may be the target right now, but I am not the reason. Very yeah. good. Yes.
Okay. And so, you know, I practice this all the time. I finally put it on cards to give to people. But the when I can not get myself sucked in mm-hmm. to some kind of it isn't always spoken, but if I feel defensive mm-hmm. or if I feel she's being unreasonable, I can't serve her.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can give her credit, you know, this person has good reason for this.
Mm-hmm.
I may not know the reason, but I also know that I'm not the reason.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the reason. And that, you know, I have this image of myself. You may have heard me talk about this. I have this invisible shield around me. I don't know if I've ever said that. And it so that when I'm in a situation like that, the shield protects me from taking these things directly.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm feeling defensive or that she's being hostile toward me,
mm-hmm.
instead of having it affect me, it bounces off. And then I can keep my eyes on her. I can yeah. keep my attention to her. And I can come out behind my shield and walk with her where she needs to go.
Perfect.
And I feel I'm not getting sucked in.
No.
And I think that's so important. And for new doulas especially, we're all as new doulas, and I'm not a new doula anymore, but it's very easy to think, oh, I did the wrong thing, or I said the wrong thing, or mm-hmm. she doesn't like me. Or
yeah.
And then it becomes about us, and really we have to say she has good reason for being this way, and I'm not the reason, and therefore I can help her. I can serve.
Yeah, that's I like that, and because that's really how I feel the doula should be. That is the root of the doula, to not be about the doula, but be about the women we are supporting. But some doulas sometimes will come away from a birth, like you said. We're not going to share the story with the woman unless she wants us to. We might be traumatized even from the birth ourselves. And what do you suggest? What is like a self-care tip for doulas, do you think? What do you do? I'm sure you've had, do you speak
well, you
to
know,
someone?
It's very important that we have an answer for that. So the doula may feel worse about it than the woman does.
Yes.
Or they both might feel awful about it, mm-hmm. either one. You know, this is called secondary traumatic stress. So that means when someone is witnessing or trying to help someone who is being traumatized, it's traumatizing in itself. So there we are.
Mm-hmm.
We have been through something very difficult,
mm-hmm.
and with the woman. And I already mentioned that we aren't supposed to start talking about how we feel to her.
Yes.
So it's a lonely place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize this. I've been through some pretty tough ones at mm-hmm. times. And I have realized that it's a very lonely place because I can't go talk to the staff about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not on the staff. We're not colleagues.
No.
I've learned not to talk to my husband about it
yeah.
because he would say, why are you doing this? Why don't you quit?
Yeah.
If it's that hard, and he doesn't get it. So I don't talk to him. And you know who we can talk to? Our sister doulas.
Mm.
Our sister doulas understand.
Yeah.
And some of our mentors, you know, you've been their trainer. I'm sure you're available to people if they have something weighing heavily on their minds, and you can be a good listener, you can be a doula to them. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where, that's where the doula gets her solace. Mm-hmm. And that's why we want to keep doulas bonded to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, the competition that sometimes exists. I don't know if you have a problem with that in the UK. We're starting to have that more and more in some ways, and trying to really see that we're a part of a very important solution to the problem of maternity care.
Yeah.
Poor outcomes in maternity care. And we should see each other that way if we can. But having a chance to talk to each other and not burden our client with our feelings. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's really important, I think.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's really good. Because I know that's something we talk a lot about now, the self-care. And yeah, I really agree with you. We should all be working together as doulas. But also in the UK, it's really difficult to get doulas involved in maternity care because we are a private entity. You know, people pay for us. And because in the UK, we have the NHS, so everyone's kind of thinking, well, we're going to get all this support anyway. And then they don't. And I guess that's a big – it's not the same in the States. I guess it's easier there for you to be offering your services to everyone.
Yeah, that's interesting that there's something good about our healthcare system, which isn't. That isn't true. You heard that the Affordable Care Act is not going down.
Yes.
Ah, that's a big deal. Yes. But anyway, that's off the subject.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll tell you, there. One of the things that's happened in the States recently is the ACOG guidelines on preventing the primary cesarean delivery. They had a huge guideline that was all, it was like, be more midwife-like, you know, many, many recommendations. But one of them was continuous support in the form of a doula. They use the word doula, not just a friend or the partner.
Yes.
But someone with training.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And who is independent of the staff. So, you know, if that is, we're seeing now, some of our hospitals now are actually incorporating doula services in the hospital. And our largest hospital here in Seattle does, I think there are four branches of this hospital, and they're doing something like, I think 11,000 births a year or something. It's wow. really big.
Yeah.
And they decided to start a doula program. And it's an interesting concept because they hired a doula to head it.
Okay.
So this doula is pretty good at walking both sides. You know, it would be very easy to bring them in and say, okay, you can't say this, you can't do that, you only can do these things, and then our effectiveness would die right there.
Yes.
But she has stuck up for the independent role of the doula. And of course, in our healthcare system, that people do pay for the doula, but they pay the hospital.
Yeah.
And then the hospital pays the doula. And they charge extra of the client. But the doctors have been much more willing to recommend doulas now because they've been vetted by Swedish hospital, you know, itself.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be these doulas that are in there telling the doctor, don't do this and don't do that, and putting their bodies out in front of the doctor, don't cut her, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you have midwives, and we do too, but still more doctors than midwives by a long shot. But I think that what I'm saying is the establishment is now starting to pay attention to the doula because the leadership in the profession is saying this has been scientifically established.
Yes.
And maybe in the UK, if they can, if you and your hospitals can see this has been demonstrated.
Mm-hmm.
And the studies are from all over the world. They're not just in the United States.
No.
So I feel hopeful. And I was wary at first. I was afraid that they would be bossing the doulas around. But this one doula who is heading it is very courageous. And she's had to knuckle under sometimes in order to keep a good relationship. But she also has the doulas can practice the way they have been taught to practice.
That's good.
And it's working. And there are other hospitals around the country, I think, that are starting to adopt similar approaches.
Yeah, because we have some doulas working within the NHS in a London hospital at the Chelsea and Westminster. but they are employed by the NHS and they have to follow some guidelines they sign up to. And they're very similar to something that we call a maternity support worker in a way. So they make up beds, they stock trolleys. Oh. I personally feel that that's getting very blurry, the boundaries. And of course, there's also then, or it has been, some conflict between the two. You know, the maternity care assistants and the doulas are not getting paid the same, and they feel they're doing the same job. So I'm not sure about doulas.
Yeah, that may be unsuccessful.
No, I think we need to doulas should be recommended by and spoken about, and women that are pregnant should be told there are doulas that you can hire. Because if, you know, if you want to have a big wedding, you pay, you know, thousands to have the perfect day. And, you know, with all the research, it's the same for a birth, really. You know, if you want to invest some money in a good memory, which you've just backed up with the research you've done.
I think the birth memory can be as good as a wedding memory, or maybe better if Auntie Jane was getting drunk over in the corner during the wedding and making a fool of herself.
You don't want that in a birth. Well, it's been really, really interesting talking to you. I also had one more question. This is one I was asked to ask you, if there's one. I think you've given us loads and loads of suggestions and advice and information about new doulas. But do you want to add anything? Do you have a golden nugget for a newbie doula when she starts out with her first few clients?
Well, this may not be the best advice in the world, but your first birth is not the best one that you'll ever do. And if you can make it adequate, you're just going to get better and better and better as you go along. So use your training well, you know, and because you will do a good job and you will be a helpful doula, and then you'll just continue to get better.
Listeners should always do their own due diligence on any information received from these discussions to form their own opinions and best judgments. In preparing this podcast, we have endeavoured to offer current, correct and clearly expressed information aimed at our audience. However, we make no claims that the information will be accurate, complete or current at all times, and we accept no liability for any reliance placed by any person on this information. We make no representations or warranties of any kind about the suitability, reliability, timeliness and accuracy of the information contained herein.